Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by some girl who's in my house. She's wearing glasses right now. I don't really recognize her. Jen, how's it going?
Doing well, thank you.
That's my wife. That's Dr. Jennifer Irwin. What are all the titles?
PT, DPT.
She's a physical therapist. She's way smarter than I am. And given the focus on LeBron James groin recently, we're going to talk about his balls for a bit. So,
oh my gosh.
I'm kidding. Christian Rivas isn't here, so we definitely aren't going to do that. What we are going to do, though, we're going to frame it like this. There's been a ton of speculation about LeBron James' return time. It's been about what he might be doing, the way that the Lakers are handling the situation, the way that his team and Clutch Sports and Rich Paul are handling the situation. I'm going to talk about that in segments 2 and 3. But for segment 1, we're just going to start with the groin injury itself and the complications that can come of it, how much the groin is actually used, time frames, all of that stuff. With injuries, especially with LeBron James and the Lakers, there isn't too much concrete stuff to go off of, but we're going to work with it as best we possibly can. So let's start with this. Rich Paul said today that when the injury initially happened, they had a 3 to 6 week recovery time period. He also mentioned that it's a tendon. He didn't say it was a muscle thing. Is there a difference between it being a tendon injury and a muscle injury?
Yeah, tendon injuries usually tend to take a little bit longer than muscle injuries, particularly because the tendon attaches the muscle to the bone. And tendons usually have a little less blood flow than muscles do. And because they attach to the bone, not only do you get tendon injury, but sometimes you can get actual bone injury where the outer covering of the bone can get irritated. And so you can have a couple more complications than just a regular muscle strain.
So with a tendon injury, is there any increased likelihood of him re-aggravating it as compared to because with the groin, just in general, it's a very tender area. Mm-hmm. It's a very easily re-aggravatable area. I've personally strained my groin a couple times, and it was some of the worst pain. You don't realize how much you use it until you pull it. So, but is there any difference in terms of complications that can arise from coming back from one injury versus the other?
Right. Yeah. With tendon injuries, I mean, that's how you develop tendonitis. Mm-hmm. Tendonitis is just repetitive injury to a tendon, and you do run into problems with that with groin strains when it happens in the tendon versus the muscle. So he is at risk for developing a tendonitis or a tendinosis if he doesn't rehab properly, if he comes back too quickly. So it's really just dependent on how he heals, how quickly he comes back, how his rehab process is going.
Is a 3 to 6 time period pretty standard stuff? I feel like that gets said about like all injuries, period.
Pretty much any run-of-the-mill injury that you see in sports is usually a 4 to 6 week injury, unless you see some freak accident like Paul George or something like that.
And if LeBron comes back after a week or so, which is what most people are kind of speculating at right now, that's in that 4 to 6 range as well. Do you think as it pertains to utilizing your groin and sports, I was legitimately trying to think today of things that you do in basketball that don't involve or that wouldn't tweak an injured groin. Can you think of anything? I'm drawing a blank. Maybe free throws?
No, well, yeah, probably free throws. You would probably use them the least. But, I mean, any sport that involves running, you're using the groin muscles. I mean, every muscle in your leg is working constantly when you're running, jumping, changing directions. And if you notice with how LeBron pulled his groin muscle, it wasn't from a simple act of jumping. It wasn't from a weird land after a jump. It was from an overstretch. So this isn't just a product of him overtraining or anything like that. This is just from him slipping. So That work kind of works it kind of works in his favor a little bit that he wasn't dealing with just chronic overuse repetitive injuries to that area in the first place. Mm-hmm. This was just a freak accident that happened, so he actually does have a better prognosis compared to somebody who has already been repeatedly injuring that muscle.
Let's say he comes back 100%. Mm-hmm. He even sides on that 6 week uber conservative timetable to make sure he's 100%. Is there any increased chance of him re-aggravating it if he plays it completely conservatively? I understand if he comes back a little too early, he can tweak it very easily. But is this the kind of thing, like with spraining an ankle, you can go out there and it's more likely that you're going to sprain that ankle again because it's really hard to wait long enough to come back. But with this one, do you think it's something that Lakers fans have to be worried about moving forward?
I wouldn't say it's something that you have to be really worried about, but with any athlete, once you injure an area, that area tends to develop scar tissue. And once you develop scar tissue, that area actually can be re-injured. So again, it's very dependent on how quickly he returns, how his rehab process goes, and how conservative he is when he returns to play. You know, making sure that they don't throw him in and play the full minutes that he was playing before, that they put him on limited play, and that they ease him back into the game rather than just going full force.
Interesting stuff. Thank you very much for hopping on. I got to record the rest of this one, so go down and enjoy some more Parks and Rec, I guess.
Okay, thank you.
And that was my wife. That was Dr. Jennifer Irwin, the way smarter half of the equation that goes on here in the Irwin household. But really interesting stuff there, and I thought it offered some context as to why you wouldn't want to rush back LeBron James. And I'm going to use that kind of as the foundation to talk in this first segment about why I think it's wrong to speculate on a guy's return date, just in general. In the third segment, I'll talk a little bit about the power structure and the amount to which LeBron James enjoys having leverage in any given situation. So that'll be the third segment here. But in the second one, I want to talk about, you know, why it is, I think, disingenuous or harmful or problematic even to wonder or speculate about an injury here. One, you just never know with somebody's injury and the way that different bodies react to different situations. And for LeBron James, this is the longest he's ever been out. I would imagine he's probably freaking out a little bit. This is mortality kind of knocking. This is father time knocking on LeBron James' door for the first time here as he goes into one of the final chapters of his illustrious career. And I would imagine that to a certain extent, he's sitting here wondering, like, gosh, this thing can all come to an end at some point, you know, and that's how mortality kind of happens. I remember, you know, it's like the first time you lose somebody you went to high school with, and that's the first time you see a peer, you know, pass away, and you look at it, and obviously different scales, and it's not exactly the same thing, but it's the first time you think, when you're 18-ish years old, or if you're earlier than that, it's the first time you ever kind of realize, holy crap, this can all end. I am not immortal, and I will one day leave this earth and go on to whatever happens next, depending on your spiritual background. And so for LeBron, I do think there's a leaning towards the conservative here so that he can remain as healthy as he possibly can over the entirety of his Lakers tenure. And I saw some people comparing it, you know, to Kobe coming back and how Kobe just fought through injury after injury after injury. Well, we saw how that happened. We saw how that worked out in the last couple of years of Kobe's career. I would imagine that if you were to ask Kobe again, he might offer up a different answer than, oh yeah, it was totally smart of me to play 48 minutes a game for an entire week in the 16th season of my career. And of course that ended poorly, right? And I think that's where the Lakers kind of find themselves now. They've went through that experience, and LeBron is now going through this experience for the first time, and he's going to play this conservatively. The other thing here too is, we'll see how the situation changes over the course of how long he's out. I wouldn't really hold it against him, and we've known this all along, that this first season is essentially an audition for everybody involved with the organization right now, other than obviously Jeannie Buss, Magic Johnson, and to a lesser extent Rob Pelinka. Luke Walton is auditioning right now, the young core is auditioning right now. LeBron is probably taking his time, not literally. I don't think he's coming back slowly to make sure this happens, but I would imagine LeBron is sitting back and keeping a very watchful eye on who he trusts moving forward here. And it's going to be something that you know, this injury, I would obviously prefer that LeBron play 82 games this season or 78 games or some number in the mid to high 70s at the very least. That doesn't appear like that's going to be the case. So what you have to do is make the best out of any situation that comes across your path here. And for the Lakers right now and for LeBron, everybody is figuring out, all right, who's gonna step up here? Who's going to show that they belong moving forward? Kuzma has done the most stepping up in terms of the willingness to step up and having the confidence to step up. But other than that one game against the Detroit Pistons, the execution hasn't quite been there. Lonzo Ball has probably been the most impactful player over the stretch right now. And yet, he hasn't done it consistently enough. Brandon Ingram is somewhere in the middle between there. Josh Hart has completely fallen off of a cliff in terms of production with LeBron James out. And these are things that are going to be stored in the back of the minds of the people who make the decisions here. In this case, it's Magic Johnson, Rob Pelinka, and LeBron James. He's going to be in on those conversations as well. The other thing here, too, is, all right, we're heading into the trade deadline. Who of the guys that Magic signed over this last summer have earned a spot beyond February, I think it's 21st? And Lance hasn't. Michael Beasley has shown flashes, but he hasn't done it consistently enough. JaVale McGee is working to come back from pneumonia, and over the course of the season has been very good. So I would imagine he sticks around for a while. Tyson Chandler, same kind of thing. KCP has played better than I think most would have envisioned with LeBron James out. So maybe he has earned himself a spot here. And again, it's just going to be an audition to see, all right, if the Lakers do want to make a push for some type of playoff production or performance this year, they're taking grades right now. They're testing out their guys. And it suits them to do so. It suits LeBron to do so. So I'm not going to hold it against him for any number of reasons why he would be holding himself out longer than fans would like him to be out, right? I don't hold it against him at all for freaking out a little bit about mortality and Father Time knocking on the door. I don't hold it against him at all for any of that, and I don't think anybody really should. So we're going to take another quick second here, and when we come back, I'm going to talk about, not about his return date, and I'm not going to speculate on that after this entire last segment, but I do want to talk a little bit about how the Lakers typically handle injuries in terms of perception and getting the message out there on said injuries. I want to talk a little bit about how that it differs from obviously what Clutch Sports and Rich Paul are comfortable with. We'll talk a little bit about which method I would prefer and which method seems to make the most sense here. And then I also want to talk about the dynamic of leverage between LeBron and the Lakers. So hold on and we'll come back and we'll talk about that. All right, so let's start here. We'll start here with the difference in how the Lakers get the message out about return dates and stuff like that, and how it seems LeBron and his team are comfortable getting that message out as well. The Lakers, for quite a while now, have played things in the Well, they're day-to-day, and they'll be day-to-day for about a month, right? And they don't quite throw out a return date. They don't like to put any hard-line dates out there. And if they do, it's typically right when the player is about to come back. It's never initially, right? I've spent all day to figure out why they would prefer to do it that way, and I think it has something to do with the teams that they're going up against, forcing them to make it more difficult to scout and strategize against the team that they could or could not be facing that night, right? If you set a hard line date and the team that you're going to be playing on that date is trying to figure out how things are going to look that night, well, it makes it a lot more difficult on those teams if they don't know who they're going to be going up against until the very last moment. So, to a certain extent, I kind of sort of get it. That said, that does lead to some frustration on the part of the fan base. Whenever every single any injury occurs, there's never any kind of transparency that you would expect out of an organization that makes some of their money off of fandom, right? Or most of their money off of fandom. And so I can understand why fans, and I get frustrated just as well, why there's frustration there on the part of fans and everybody else that, hey guys, just give us a date. Or give us a something close to a time frame that we can be a little bit more realistic than, like, as soon as you hear day to day, and maybe it's something that fans and I have to change the way that I view it too, is when you hear day to day, you think, okay, well, if it's day to day, then there's a chance that they return within a few days, right? Depending on what the injury is. But what might need to happen here is when they say day to day, you have to start thinking, maybe do a little bit of homework yourself and find out what the typical time frame is for the return of said injury. And in most cases, as Jen said in the first segment, it's around 4 to 6 weeks for the average run of the mill injury that is going to hold a player out, right? So I think, you know, maybe it's something that I need to get better at, or the fans need to get better at. Personally, I disagree, and I think based on the way that they have handled their information, LeBron James and Clutch Sports seems to disagree with the way that the Lakers handle their business here. Rich Paul just came out and said, when the injury occurred, we gave it a 3 to 6 week return date or time frame to return. And you know, maybe they might have preferred that the Lakers just released information in that 3 to 6 time frame information rate, right? And I kind of understand and I get where they're coming from, because what I wouldn't want to do, and this is where it's a little different, where the team has to look out for their interests as well as the players. In this case, the Clutch Sports and the agency and Rich Paul, they mostly have to keep their interests out solely for the player. And what's best for the player is that level of transparency, so fans aren't frustrated when it takes a little bit longer than is expected with a day-to-day initial prognosis. So it's interesting the way that this has all come out, and it reminds me that, hey, this is still a bit of a power struggle at the very top here between the Lakers and LeBron James. LeBron has been, since he came into the league, maybe even before he came into the league, when he made it a point to hire his high school friends, he sent them to college, and he got them the training necessary to be able to make the decisions and play out the roles that they've been playing throughout the entirety of his career. He's very interested in creating and maintaining as much leverage in any given situation as he can possibly hold. And I think this is an example, potentially, of him trying to get some of that leverage back. I'm not speculating. I'm not even going to go so far as to say that LeBron is holding out longer than he would normally hold out so that he can get something done in the organization. I think that's very problematic. I think it's not the way that you want to handle the information that comes out about a player's injury. So I want to be 100% clear there. I do, however, know that over the course of LeBron James' career, he has grabbed any and all leverage that he possibly could, and rightfully so. When you're a professional athlete, or generally speaking, when you're a part of the workforce here in America, it's kind of sort of a negotiation on a day-to-day basis between you and your employer. And any time that you can grab leverage for yourself, you should, right? And LeBron has done that to an incredible degree of both consistency and success. And I think this is him. He gave away some of that leverage by signing a 3-year deal with the Lakers. He did keep some of that leverage by having that 4th-year option. But I think, compared to how things went in Cleveland, he might not be as comfortable as he might have thought he was going to be going in when he signed that deal, with the lack of leverage that he has to pull some strings around the organization. If the Lakers really want to play this cold-heartedly, and they don't operate this way with superstars, so I don't think they would, but if the Lakers wanted to operate as strictly a, no, we're going to look out for ourselves. You're on a contract for the next 3 years. We'll work with you as best we can, but at the end of the day, we owe it to ourselves to look out for numero uno. They kind of could, right? Now, LeBron could demand a trade, and he could hold out and some of these things. But for the most part, the Lakers have the upper hand here in terms of leverage and making the wheels spin organizationally. And I'm not saying this is what he's doing. I'm not even willing to speculate that it's something that he is doing. But LeBron has a history of forcing or trying to force the teams he plays for hand to make moves happen that he thinks put him and the team in a better situation moving forward. What that move might be, who knows? Maybe he isn't as fond, or maybe Clutch isn't as fond of Luke Walton as we think. Maybe they prefer somebody who is under that umbrella as well. Maybe he is sick of playing with the young guys and is holding out to get a trade to happen because the Lakers freak out as they fall out of the playoff picture. Maybe. I don't think I'm willing to say I'm 99% sure, 99.99999999999 infinity percent sure that isn't what's that's not going on right now. I just think that the dynamic between the Lakers, which is a worldwide brand, one of the strongest brands in the world of sport, and them going up against LeBron James and Clutch, and LeBron being one of the strongest brands in all of sport, like, this is a fascinating dynamic that's going on. And I think they're both in this feeling out stage of figuring out how it's best for them to work together. I thought it was really interesting to hear Rich Paul say that they're going to do what's best for them and look out for themselves, and they're right to do so. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out over not just the next couple weeks as we wait for LeBron to come back, but over the next few years as we watch these two entities, these mega monsters in business, go up against each other, or not against each other, but try to work together and maintain that negotiation that goes on between employer and employee. It's going to be fascinating to watch how this all comes to be and plays out. And this is just one of the first examples of maybe the two entities not necessarily being on the same page. So we'll see how things turn out. Hopefully, we get some good news when the Lakers come back from their 2-game road trip. LeBron won't be out there for the game against OKC or Houston. They'll return home and they'll play against the Warriors, who at that time might have DeMarcus Cousins back. There's a whole bunch going on right now around the Lakers, and a lot of it is based on speculation, and a lot of it is hitting the doldrums of an 82-game season and trying to find anything whatsoever to talk about. But a lot of it is also legitimately fascinating stuff. So we'll see how it turns out. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Shouts to my wife for coming on and making the show smarter. Shouts to you guys for listening. Have a great rest of your day and make somebody else's.